How can we pull up the source sheet?
Yeah, I'm also going to share a screen so you can see the source sheet. Okay, everybody see the source sheet? Yeah, you guys see the source sheet? Yes or no?
Yeah, we see it.
Okay, let's get started. Okay, so we're here on Rosh Chodesh Elul. So obviously that brings up the coming Chagim. So if you guys don't mind, we're actually going to skip Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur all the way to Sukkot. And every year, of course, since childhood, we've taken the four species, the Lulav, Etrog, Hadassah, and Hadassim and Arava. And we're going to try to figure out what's going on in the symbolism of those species, what the deeper meaning is. And we're going to see, we're going to try to find the place for the Arava, the poor Arava, which we'll see has not fared well in our traditional history. We'll see if we can kind of, as it were, rescue and redeem the Arava. Okay, so let's get started with the first source here, which is in front of you. And this is probably what those of us who were in Orthodox elementary schools all learned in elementary school. It's what is going on when we take these four species. What symbolism is there? What should we be thinking about? Okay, so there's a famous midrash in Bikur Rabba. This is the first source, which says, V'arvei Nachal, Elu Yisrael, right? This is the Jewish people. And I skipped most of the Midrash, but it says that the four species are the four kinds of Jews. Very famous. And having taste represents having Torah. Having smell, having reach, a good smell, would represent Masim Tovim. And then all the other species do well, at least in one category. The Etrog is a double winner. The Etrog is those Jews with Torah and Masim Tovim, taste and smell. Right, the lulav only has taste, right? The hadassim only have smell. And then we get to the poor arava. So let us continue in Vayikra Rabba. Ma arava zu ein ba tam ve ein ba reach. This arava has no taste and smell. Achem Yisrael, so to the Jewish people. Yeish behem b'nei Adam, she'ein behem lo Torah, v'lo masim tovim. Unfortunately, there are Jews who are not stellar in either of those areas, be they the intellectual or the ethical, right, the academic or the practical. They don't have wisdom and they don't have deeds. So they're the poor Arava. Umar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oseh Lahem. What is God going to do with this fourth category of Am Yisrael? La'avdan Yefshar. God loves humanity. He loves the Jewish people. He does not want to destroy them. Elamar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So God says, Yukshru Kulam Aguda Achat. Let me tie them all together. Vein Mechaprim Elu Al Elu. And they will atone for each other. Okay, so that's the idea. We bring all four together, and somehow those Jews who would not marry...
Wow, this is crazy. We're about to start.
...able to marry as part of the collective. Apparently, there's individual judgment.
Oh, my gosh. Judgment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In terms of collective judgment. Okay, this probably, I think we could all agree. Okay, since I can't hear you, I don't know what Natan and Sam are smiling about, but they look at that and agree. Okay, so...
Oh, my God.
There's individual judgment, collective judgment. At least our vote can make it through in terms of the collective. Okay, let's file that aside. And go to another midrash, probably the other thing you all learned in elementary school. Okay, the midrash then continues. Rabbi Mani Patach, Kalatz Motai Tamar Hashem Ikamocha. There's an idea of religious worship being a whole body experience, right? It's not just for the soul, it's for the entire physicality of the person. So, Lona Pasuk Zeyabu Shilulav, what is this? This is also the four meaning. Hashedra Shilulav, Dom Lishedra Shiladam, right? The spine represents the lulav. Hadas domel ayin, hadasim reminds you of eyes. Arava domel peh, the willow reminds you of the human mouth. The etrog domel lev, and the etrog is like the heart. So when we take the four species, there's a sense of the totality of the human body being involved in religious life. Amr David ein b'chol avrim gadol me'elu, shein shkun kegel gof, ave kolatz motai tamarna. All my limbs are now singing out to God. Okay, so we've got two classic themes, which we're going to come back to in about 5 minutes. Again, the four species as four kinds of Jews, or the four species as four parts of the body. Okay, now before we try to deepen the thought there and try to rescue the poor willow branch, okay, let us go to Moreh Nevuchim. Now, you might imagine that the Rambam in his great philosophy book is going to have a hard time thinking these midrashim are really what the Arba Minim are about. Now, famously, in the third, many of you know this, in the third chelik of Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam tries to find reasons for every single mitzvah. And this is a particularly interesting chapter. If anyone's looking for an interesting chapter to read this month, this is a good chapter to read. Chelik Gimel, Perek Mem Gimel, goes through all the chagim. one of the reasons for the various details. Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuot, Yom Kippur. Very interesting stuff. Let's go to what the Rambam says in Moreh Nebuchim. So says the Rambam, Amnam arba minim shebulav, these four species, for zarchu zal bo ktsat siba, Chazal mentioned things. Apparently, right in the Rambam's time, these midrashim were well known. Four kinds of Jews, four parts of the body. Al tzad ha-drashot. What were Chazal doing? They're making drashot. Shedarkam yadua l'mi she'evin darkehem. Their way is well known. What does that mean? B'zeh she'em etzlam kidmut melitzad hashir. There's something poetic. There's a literary flourish going on. Lo shadavrahu inyana pasuku. But it's not actually what the pasuk is saying. So the Rambam says, when it comes to many agadot and many drashot, Chazal are not claiming that is what's actually going on, but it's a sermon's idea. It's a homiletical idea, right? All our shul rabbis do this. They want to say a good idea. So we find the pasuk, we find some symbolism, but it's not really what it's about. Okay, so according to Rambam, what is it about? So this will give you something interesting to think about. I actually think about this every year in Sukkot. Ranili ba'arba minim shibulav. What are they? Shem simcha b'tseitam min ma'abidbar. We're happy we left the desert. Asher haya lo makom zera v'tefa teina v'gefen v'imonu ma'amayim l'shtot. It's a barren place. By the way, it's interesting because if you're really good, I wish I could write like this. If you're a good rabbinic writer, you can't say anything without like a pasuk jumping out at you. Anyone recognize that pasuk? Okay, the Rambam is simply saying they left the desert, which was a barren place. But he's quoting from Bamidbar Chaf. That's how Am Yisrael expresses their disappointment when they can't get water, right? The whole Moshe and the rock story. Okay, so he throws out a pasuk there. El makom ha'ilanot nonei privanarot. To a place of lush foliage where we have trees and fruits and like, it's just great. Now, think about Sukkot, this makes a lot of sense. If Sukkot is the journey from the arid desert to the lush land of Israel, so what more would you want to commemorate than symbols of bounty, symbols of produce? That's what's going on, says the Rambam. Okay, now look what he says. Now, you might still say, okay, I didn't see that, but you could all think about this, especially now we have the land of Israel. It's very nice to think about in Sukkot. You could hold your Arba Minim and think about four kinds of Jews. You could think about parts of the body. You could think about, thank God, like we live in a place where we get produce. I guess those of you who live in America could think about the fact that there's no such thing as a season in America. Right? The fruits are always there. Yeah, they're always in the supermarket. Right? So that's why we're grateful. We're not in a barren and desolate place. You know, obviously, one could still ask, why these four? Interesting question. Is the Rambam going to give reason for details or not? But he does. Here, look what he says. V'lakach l'ziko anzeh, ha'na'eh she'peirat adamah, the nicest fruit, the most pleasant fruit. I guess the Rambam would say the etrog is the most beautiful. V'atov she'berecho, the nicest smell, which I guess will have to be by default the hadas. V'yafeh she'ba'alin, the nicest leaves. I guess we're left with the lulav. V'atov she'basavim, and the most beautiful grass. The Aravot, so Rambam would say, oh, this represents different kinds of produce. We have fruit, we have leaves, we have grass. It's just great, land of Israel. You just can't beat it. Come to land of Israel, guys. The cherry tomatoes will be better. We perfected the cherry tomato here. It's just great. Right, so that is the move from Israel, from the desolate desert to the lush land of Israel. Okay, so that's great. Great symbolism. So according to the Rambam, it's not really about those midrashim. Really, this is the point. However, the Rambam does say, I think you guys will find this interesting, the Rambam was not above giving very practical reasons. I admit I don't find practical reasons as exciting, but they might be true. Look what he says. The Elu Arbat Minim Hashem Asher Katsu Shoshad Rameila. These four Minim have three other factors. Hachad Meim Rov Mitzvutam Beretz Yisrael Beiti. They could be found in Israel. They're Kalachad Yichol Matzam. So the Rambam said, we're not going to pick produce that only grows in, you know, the New World. We're not going to pick corn because you can't get it. So you have to pick produce that grew in Israel in the ancient world. So the Rambam would say these four species grew in Israel. Vinyin Hasheni, Tov Marev Ran Lutam. They are good looking. Okay, he already mentioned that. The Eshmim Tovim Brecham, some are nice smelling as well. Vimetog Vadas. Avuluv Ra'ilam Notam Vlorech Velo Re'a. Okay, so he wants to claim that A, they're practically found in Israel. B, they smell nice and taste good. Vinyin Hashlishi, and here I think some of you will quibble with this. Amdam alechutam v'ranutam, they're able to withstand and maintain their freshness b'shiva yamim. Now again, I'm a little curious about this because my aravot really struggle. In fact, if any of you have any great theories for keeping aravot fresh for the entire chag, you could chat me, email me, let me know. But the Rambam seems to argue that these four things chosen would last better than the alternative. Look at the alternative he suggests. Ma she'i efshar zeh ba'afar seikim v'rimonim. Like, how do we choose in, I don't know, a peach, a pomegranate, or a pear, right? The three peas, they would not last. They would not make it through 7 days. So we picked these four things. So again, just to sum up Rambam, I think it's interesting to note, for Rambam, these midrashim are not really where the Arba Minim are at. It's really being thankful for bounty, which is certainly a good theme to think about in Sukkot time. And there's these practical things, says Rambam. They're found in Israel. They smell good. They taste good. They look good. And they could last 7 days. Okay, great. Let us now, we're going to go a little bit, we like to be a little versatile here. So we are going to go from the heart of medieval rationalism to contemporary Hasidut. You can't beat that for a good transition. Okay, let us go to contemporary Hasidut. Now you might imagine, here we have to give Hasidim credit. This is actually very good. I didn't think about this till right now. It's always good to give shiur. New things come up. You know, the Rambam, many of you know I love Rambam. He did have an elitist streak. There's no denying it. Sometimes when you're reading Rambam, you get a sense like only the wise people really rate, right? Those poor people who are not gifted intellectually are kind of, they're just kind of like they're like added throw-in. They're filler, right? They're like the extras on a movie set. Now, I have to admit, I find it a bit troubling, right, to think that what really matters in humanity is just, you know, the 1% that's smartest and can access, you know, metaphysical speculation. It's a little bit hard for me to accept. So if we want to move away from that aspect of Rambam's thought, perhaps there's nothing better than moving to, hey, Mikey, there's nothing better than, great to see you, Mikey, than moving to the world of Hasidut. Because what do you have in the world of Hasidut, of course? A certain almost idealization of the more simple Jew. Right, I think it's part of Hasidut. You know, maybe in the Misnag, it's good. Every world has said, those of us who are in Hasid, including myself, every world has something to learn from the other worlds. So if the non-Hasid world sometimes can be a little bit too intellectualist, you know, being smart is what matters in life. Maybe we need a little Hasidic spirit to realize, you know, maybe, you know, being nice is what matters in life. And we should care about the common man also. Okay, so you might imagine the Hasidim are going to be a little bit troubled by the Midrash. Let's go back to the opening Midrash. What did we have there? We had the Midrash. Oh, we've got the Lulav, the Etrog, the Hadassim. They all have good qualities. Oh, that poor Arava doesn't have Chachma, doesn't have Torah, does not have Masim Tovim. It's just, you know, this, you know, worthless willow branch. So you might imagine if you're a Hasidic writer, you have a little bit of a motivation to rescue the willow. We're going to do that now, guys. Two attempts to redeem and rescue the willow branch. So that's one aspect of Hasidut. One last preface. There's another instinct of Hasidut. Hasidut, many of you have heard this from me before. They have a principle which James Kugel called omni-significance. Look for the maximum amount of meaning. Right? No details are arbitrary. Every detail has... Hey, Ezra Cohn's here. Ezra Cohn, how are you? He's not looking at the screen, though. Good to see you, Ezra. Okay, every detail has some kind of deeper meaning. Okay, Robbie Bernstein, I finally going through the test here. Okay, and Simi, great to see you guys.
Where's your client? Sound.
Okay, Jeremy Wilson, I assume. Jeremy W., I assume is Jeremy Wilson. Okay, we're going to go back here. Sorry, I only want to see four people at a time, so I got to finally click and see the other people. Okay, let us go to one last thing about Hasidut. So everything has meaning, so they love it when the details come together. That's the best thing ever. You get a five details that lead to the same conclusion, the Hasidim are happy. Okay, so let us go to the Svar Emet. The Svar Emet is the Ger Rebbe. Okay, he is, some of you know, actually love his Yiddish on Shas. Those of you learning more this year, looking for the Yiddish on Shas. So if you're learning either something in Moed or Kachem, it's really wonderful. In the broader Jewish world, most people like the Svar Emet on Chumash. That's more popular. I'm actually a big fan of Svar Emet on Shas. But let's look at what he says on Chumash here. L'hoshana Rabba, Mitzvat Arava. Now notice, if we want to rescue the Arava, if we want the Arava to have its day in the sun, as it were, its day to shine, what in our tradition, of course, is the Arava most manifest, Hoshana Rabbah. But in fact, when there was a Beit HaMikdash, right, there was a ritual of putting the Arava on the Mizbeach. Okay, in fact, that's why, I'm really not going to do this, I can't do a tangent in a half hour shiur, it's a problem. But that's, actually, I will do it, I'm going to do it anyway. Okay, that is why, sorry guys, I can't resist this. Rosh Hashanah can't fall out in 3 days, right? You guys heard this in elementary school? Lo Adu Rosh. Rosh Hashanah cannot fall out on Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. I bet no one on your college campus knows why. You're now going to be the only person to know why. You can go impress your friends at the next frat party. Okay, here we go. It can't fall out on Sunday, on Wednesday or Friday, because we don't want Yom Kippur to be adjacent to Shabbat. If Rosh Hashanah is Wednesday, Yom Kippur is Friday. If Rosh Hashanah is Friday, Yom Kippur is Sunday. Why do you want Yom Kippur adjacent to Shabbat? Because the only day they wouldn't bury the deceased in the old world was Shabbos and Yom Kippur. And they didn't want a 48-hour period when you couldn't bury the deceased. So they said, if we just make sure Yom Kippur never falls on Sunday or Friday, There'll never be a 48-hour period you can't bury the deceased, because they would even bury the deceased on Yom Tov. Right? On Yom Tov Sheni, they would do it themselves. On Yom Tov Rishon, they would ask non-Jews to do it. Great. Why can't Rosh Hashanah fall out on Sunday? Because if Rosh Hashanah is Sunday, Hoshana Rabbah is Shabbos. They didn't want Hoshana Rabbah to be Shabbos because they didn't want to lose out on that ritual of putting the Arava on the Mizbech. So without getting to too many details, if you ask where in our tradition is the Arava manifest, the Arava have its day in the sun, Hoshana Rabbah. Okay, back to the Sfar Emet. Amru Chazal, Arava neged otan she'en lam tamreach. Arava is corresponding to those of tamreach. Imke malahem. You can't get more Hasidic than these guys. So what do they have, these poor Jews? If you give them a test on Baba Batra, they don't know it. If you ask, are they leading the Tzedakah committee? They're not involved. So what do they have? Rak Tfila. But maybe they're the poor Jew who's not so involved in charity and not so involved in Torah. But they turn to God in a heartfelt way, right? Classic Hasidic, maybe that's what they represent. They've got something. They've got their place to shine. Now look how many things, some of you are going to love this, some of you won't, but look how many things he brings together. Shekolan arev lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's playing, of course, with the word arava. Right? Arava has many meanings. One meaning of ayin resh bet is sweetness. Like in Birkat HaTorah, right? Vaharevna. So they have a sweet voice, right? They turn to God in prayer with a sweet voice. Next. Zeb b'china David HaMelech Lashem Ne'emez Meir Yisrael. Now again, I don't say it. I'm not Hasidic enough, apparently. But some of you might say the Ushpizen. If you say the Ushpizen, well, you'll never guess who falls out on seventh day of Sukkot. So the latest of the Ushpizen, who is David. Now, David would be a great symbol of prayer. Now, David has certainly a complex career. But if you ask, where does David show his pious side? As the author of some of Sefer Tehillim, right? Some of the most beautiful prayers in our tradition. So David is also represents prayer. Now let's keep going, guys. Really, whether you're Hasidic or not, you gotta like this actually. Kmokin Arava Domil Sfatayim. Let's go back to the second Midrash. What the Arava represent in the body parts? The lips. Once again, lips which utter prayer. V'u'afresh ben saf she'en pir chalak, lakach tiknu tfilot boshana rabin. And indeed, put the last part together. What is Hoshana Rabbah in our tradition? It's a much longer davening than every other day of Chol HaMoed, right? Probably as a kid, we probably hated it. Because you go to Shul on the third day of Chol HaMoed and it's not endless. And you go to Shul on Hoshana Rabbah and it's endless. But for the Sfar Emet, it's just great. Sometimes there's a lot. But notice how much he's putting together here. Both Midrashim, a number of the details, the Ushpizin, it all comes together. One more and let's review how much he put together here. The Lashon Arava, if you think he's not done, he's done yet, he's not done. Arava could have that arave sweetness element. Kimo tarovet. What's the other element here? Ayin resh bet could be a mixture, as in the word eruv. Now, what are we happening? What are we doing? Shenitab kula shem. We're mixing, we're clinging to God, as it were, in the prayer. So just to put it, I think we've had put six things together here for this Sfar Emet. Again, the first midrash, the arava is those Jews without tam v'reach, but for him, he's rescued them. They don't have Chachma, Torah, they don't have Masim Tovim, but they daven nicely. That's where they shine. Next Midrash, which part of the body is the Arava? The lips. You can't be that. That's what utters prayer. Next, the word Arava, he's played with twice. Kolan Arav, the sweet voice of the good davener, and Tarovet. This enables us to cling to God in a profound way. Finally, we have the Ushpizen. Right? Oh, who's the Ushpizin of the seventh day of Sukkot? David HaMelech, the great prayer writer of Israel. So I think we've nicely put 5 points together, and the Ge'er Rebbe says this would be why the Arava has a place. Okay, we're good with that? Okay, wonderful. We are now going to move on to a second way to rescue the Arava. Okay, here we go. Let us see if we can rescue the Arava in a different fashion. All right, here we go. Oh, here's even more. Oh, I went to a fourth sale. Look at that. Isaac Saltz is there. And Rafi Wind, Isaac Saltz. Guys, if you want to see the most scary beards, it is Isaac and Rafi right there. Okay, leading the beard collection. My wife, Noah, says, hello. Shelby Mandel, the pillar of the Binghamton Bay Midrash, is there. Max Helfand, who's with you over there? Great to see you. And Mark Weitzen is there. Master of Sephardi Halacha and Musar. Okay, very exciting, guys. Okay, we're going back here. Okay. Sorry, guys, I only see four of you at a time, so I realized to click somewhere. All right, here we go. Let's go to the last source of the day. Okay. Ezra Cohen, don't ask any halachic shilas during the show. We only have 10 minutes left. Okay, here we go. Last halachic source of the day. We are going to the Pachad Yitzchak. Hey, Pacha Yitzchak is, of course, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner. Since we only have 10 minutes left, I am not going to do his biography here. But he really is a fascinating thinker. If you've never encountered Pacha Yitzchak, I cannot recommend him more. Okay, he has pieces on the Chagim, so you can look at Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Or what I really recommend is his volume of letters, Igot V'Ketuvim. Let's see what he says here in the fourth source. Says Rav Huner, "L'musag gadol b'muvan ruchani." If we ask about this concept gadol, yeshnam shnei hafachim. There are two opposites to gadol. Okay, now I've said to many of you before, Rav Huner is very into sensitivity to language. So Rav Huner is going to tell us here that the word gadol could be contrasted with two things. And it's a big difference what you contrast it with. Let's keep going. Sometimes gadol, oh, this is a great word, guys. In Hebrew, betor, if we translate to Latin, it would be qua. Betor, it is nigud lekatan. It is the opposite of small. There's big and there's small. Ulafamim, sometimes in Hebrew, betor nigud lepashut. If I say that person's a gadol, so I mean he's great. What might be the opposite of great? That means you're small. I mean, you're simple. Right, I'll give you an example. Kohen is like this. Kohen Gadol, we don't oppose the Kohen Gadol to the Kohen Katan. We oppose him to the Kohen Hedyot. So it'd be more like there's a simple run-of-the-mill Kohen and a great Kohen. So I could use the word Gadol. There's Gadol and there's something smaller, but there's Gadol and something simpler. For Rav Huner, why is that important? Let's go. There's a big difference in those two relationships. Again, there's Gadol versus Katan and Gadol versus Pashut. What's the difference? Here we go. Katan lagabe gadol haru b'vchinat yesh b'chla matay mana. When we talk about katan and gadol, it's like the relationship between 200 and 100. Kishem shein b'mana davar mashein b'matayim, k'mo k'ein b'katam shivto v'shein b'gadol. Ela shakatan nechla b'gadol b'tal mitocho. Okay, let us say I've got two apples, and Alex Agus has one. So I have everything Alex has, right? There's nothing to one apple that is not found in two apples. I have his one apple plus another one. So if you're talking about quantity, so gadol versus katan, there's nothing to being a katan that is not found in the gadol. Again, don't think about age for now. It might be simply just about like objects, right? If you have $200, you have everything that the guy who has $100 had. You have $100 and you have more. Ah, now things get deep, guys. Masha ein kein ha-pashut, that is not true if I deal with the other opposition. What if I move on to the gadol pashut opposition? Certainly, in many ways, the gadol has much more than the pashut. The great individual, the more complex individual, has something the simple individual does not. The pashut, unlike the katan has nothing the gadol lacks. The pashut has something the gadol lacks. What is that? Shekein mishulal hu agadol mirchusho neflesh la pashut. The gadol lacks the great possession of pashut. The haino, what is it? Ha-pashtut. Simplicity. This guys, Rav Huner, I think he's saying something really deep. I know it's funny because it's about something simple, but it's deep. This says simplicity is a positive quality. I mean, what just happened? $100, if I don't have 200, not having 100 is not a quality. It's just an absence. So there's nothing in the katan that is lacking in the gadol. But there's something to simplicity. Sometimes in life, we're all too complex. Okay, some of you may have heard this from me before. I apologize, but it's just a good example. Like, sometimes we're just too intellectually complex about things. Here's a good example. Let us say I'm walking down the street with a simple farmer, and we see somebody fall down. And my reaction is, well, I'd like to help the guy, but first I'm going to analyze ethical theory, right? Am I, you know, a Kantian? Am I a consequentialist? Am I an Aristotelian virtue ethicist? After I philosophize about that for about 20 minutes, I'll help the guy up. And the simple farmer next to me says, I don't philosophize, but I'm going to help a guy. I will go there and pick the person up. There is something to be valued in that. Like, sometimes we make everything overly complex, and we need to just get in touch with a more beautiful, simple intuition, emotion, behavior, as it were. So there's something to simplicity. So I think Rav Huner says something very powerful here. If you're a gadol vis-a-vis a katan, you got everything the katan has. You should realize if you're a gadol vis-a-vis a pashut, he's got something that, or she's got something you lack. Okay, let's keep reading. And we still have not gotten to our topic. Hamone Am, although I think it's an important idea per se. Hamone Am Yisrael, the multitudes of Israel, Gabe Anche Madrega, in opposed to the men of stature, Einam Bivchinak Tenim Lagabe Gdolim. Let us say you're a famous Jew, you're a great scholar, a great rabbi. Don't think of the multitudes as their Ktanim and Amagadol. Kim Bivchinat Pshutim Lagabe Gdolim. But think about that as Pshutim. I mean, maybe you recognize, I know much more, I have a much more sophisticated and complex theory of the universe than they do, but they've got something that I could learn from. I think it changes your atmosphere, right? The Gadol does not say, since I know much more than them, there's nothing I could possibly gain from their society, from their ideas, from their behavior patterns, from their emotions, not at all. Now, let's bring it home, guys. The Choshvani, I think, Kizui Achat Me'akavanot Shel Ha'arava. That is one of the ideas of the Arava. Now, notice, Rav Hunter is not exactly a Hasidic thinker, although he did come from Hasidic stock. But I think, once again, we have this impulse almost, how can we leave a whole group out? These poor Aravot, they get no credit in second grade. They get nothing good to them. No, they've got something to them. They might not have Torah and Chachmah in a more complex and sophisticated fashion. They've got perhaps a certain simplicity, maybe a certain simple integrity that is worthy of learning from. Look what he says now. He has to play with the Midrash a little bit for it to make it all work out. She'ein ba lo tam v'lo reach. What does it sound like now? They've got nothing, right? They've got no taste. They've got no smell. These poor Aravot. Look what Rav Hunter does. Kiyaduam Armazal, didavka yom hoshana rabba yeshbo inyan gadol. Once again, somehow hoshana rabba is the day where Arava becomes the essential symbol. So that shows they've got a place. Mash enkin b'chol shar yamim. Mifnei why? Shebemet. What's the truth? Yesh b'arava tam v'reach. They do have a tam v'reach. She'ein limso dugmatam b'balei tam v'reach. And their tam v'reach you can't find with those who we normally say have a tam v'reach. So just to contrast here, I think it's very interesting how the Svat Emet, the Ger Rebbe, and the Pachad Yitzchak and Rav Hutner both wanted to save the Arava, but they both played with the Midrash in different ways. Because again, it's a little bit difficult because the Midrash says they don't have any tam, they don't have any reach, they don't have any Torah, they don't have any masim tovim. So I think each one dealt with it differently. The Svat Emet said they don't have A and B, but they've got C. Right? They don't have Torah and masim tovim, but they've got tefillah. Right? It's the simple Jew who's able to turn to God in prayer. That's where they shine. Okay, great. Notice, though, for Rav Hutner, he deals with it kind of, hey, Aryeh Laufer's here. Oh, look, there you go, Aryeh Laufer. Great to see your name there. Okay, but for Rav Hutner, how does it work? They don't have a certain kind of tam v'reach, but they've got a different quality, right? He plays it a little differently. They've got a different quality tam v'reach, right? They have this virtue of kind of a basic simplicity, decency, integrity that is sometimes lacking in more complex people. Let me maybe sum up the entire shiur, and it was really great to see so many names here. Okay, I'm sorry in this brief context I wasn't able to hear from you guys. But if anyone sends me an email, tell me what's going on in your life, I'll tell you what's going on in my life. Okay, here we go, very brief. We're going to come to Sukkot this year. What's happening with these Arba Minim? So most of us in elementary school, again, learned two beautiful Midrashim. Four kinds of Jews coming together. We can do more things as a collective unity than we can do individual basis. Or four parts of the body. This idea of religious life being bodily and not just the soul. Great. Says the Rambam, Morin Vuchim. Okay, there's something for you all to think about the Sukkot. That's not really what it's about. Those are beautiful Midrashim. It's really about our gratitude of leaving the desert and being brought to the land of Israel. We have produce. We have access to it. It's just great. I think that's something we can all think about when we're davening. Right? Thank God we live in a more affluent society than most of human history or most of Jewish history, right? A little gratitude, great thing to think about on Sukkot. Okay, then, but if we stop right there, if we go back to the, the Rambam also had the practical thing. Remember the practical things? We could find them in the land of Israel. They look good, they smell good, they last for 7 days. The Rambam apparently had a better method than I do for Aravot. Fine. Finally, but we say, well, let's go back to the Midrash. The poor Arava is left out in the cold. We have rescued the Arava. Says the Svat Emet, the Ger Rebbe, Arava, are those Jews, simple Jews who pray. Think of again how much he brought together here, remember? That's why they're the mouth. That's why they're the first Midrash. That's why it's David HaMelech and Lushpizen. Arave, the sweetness of their voice. Tarovet, we can cling to God. You just can't beat that. That is the Svat Emet. Then Rav Hutner rescues them in a different way. He says, don't think about Gadol versus Katan and Gadol versus Pashut. The Aravot have a beautiful quality called simplicity, which we could all learn from. So they have their own tam v'reach. Just to sum up the whole shiur, right? But many of us in the room sometimes, you know, we get a little, I'll criticize myself. Those of us have a strong intellectual bent, whether we're in that, academic world or world of yeshiva, because we happen to be smart. So we sometimes don't have enough respect for Jews who are not as gifted intellectually or people who are not as gifted intellectually. Perhaps the Ger Rebbe and Rav Hutner have given us an important corrective. like the Svarimet would tell us, but he might be able to pray with more sincerity and piety and devotion, right? We should respect that in the Svarimet. And Rav Huna would say, even intellectually, like sometimes all our complexity is just missing the point. And the certain simple integrity of the Pashut Jew is something that the Gadol has what to learn from. Okay, I'm over my half hour, so I'm going to stop here. Again, it has been a pleasure learning with all of you. And please, if any of you have any, hey, Simi, nice to see you. If any of you have any comments or just feedback or tell me what's going on in your life, that would be great. I'm going to sign off here. And everybody should have a wonderful first month of the year, no matter what you're doing with college or end of the year. You know, or Mr. Agus, you should have a great time in business and all your enjoy your family there. And guys, please keep in touch.
Thank you. Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.